Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, a celebration of music on this July 4th Independence Holiday weekend. Juliet Fromholt brings us the words and music of Skillless Villains, her in-studio guest this past Wednesday night on Kaleidoscope. Later, we'll check in with Bill Felker and Poor Will's Almanac. Up first, an investigation into last week's alleged gunman at the Glen Helen Nature Preserve has ended with the suspension of the staff member who now says that they made the story up. On Thursday, June 27th, Antioch College and the Glen Helen Nature Preserve were placed on lockdown following the report of a man dressed in camouflage with what appeared to be a handgun near the Outdoor Education Center. Greene County Sheriff's deputies searched the area for several hours, eventually lifting the lockdown after an extensive four-mile radius search was completed. Now, Antioch College, which owns the Glen, says the staff member who reported the gunman admitted to investigators that the claim was false. Following the report of that gunman, children attending the Eco Camp had to be picked up by their parents, some from out of state. The Greene County Sheriff's Department and Antioch College both provided extra security to monitor the campus and surrounding areas throughout that weekend. The college says the employee who made the false report has been placed on suspension pending further investigation, and they are working with the Greene County Sheriff's Department to determine what, if any, legal action may be taken. According to the Ohio State Highway Patrol, pilot error was the cause of a crash at the Vectren Dayton Air Show last month. Killed in the June 22nd accident were the plane's owner, 44-year-old Jane Wicker, who was performing a wing-walking stunt at the time, and the pilot, 64-year-old Charlie Schwenker. The report cites slow speed and a lack of lift causing the plane to stall, then crash before thousands of spectators. Lieutenant Ann Ralston says the patrol's report is based on eyewitness accounts, video, and measurements taken at the crash site. Here's part of our conversation from earlier this week. You mentioned something that I guess is very important, and that is the distinction between the Highway Patrol report and the National Transportation Safety Board report, which will come out maybe up to a year from now.
Right. Our basic aircraft crash report is completed, and the investigation continues in terms of the National Transportation Safety Board, who will ultimately determine the cause of the crash. And again, that's still under investigation. At the same time, the Highway Patrol has completed our basic aircraft crash report at this point.
And so let's talk briefly about the results of the Highway Patrol report.
Basically, what the report does is simply documents the scene. A field sketch is done. We document the pilot, any other persons that were occupants. In this case, the other person was the stunt person, the wing walker, that was on the aircraft at the time of the crash. We'll document the date, time, location, the weather conditions, basically anything that we can gather in terms of evidence at that crash scene. Also on there, it asks for cause. The cause was noted as pilot error. However, I think it's really important to note that the actual determination as the cause of the crash will be determined by the National Transportation Safety Board.
And are they also doing their own investigation of the crash site, or do they use the information that you provide?
Well, we provide the report to them, and exactly what they're doing in terms of their investigation, I think I would have to leave that up to them to determine that, but certainly our crash report is complete, and that will be provided to the National Transportation Safety Board.
Okay. Thanks for speaking with me on such short notice.
Oh, no problem. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. And a preliminary report from federal investigators says Schwenker and Wicker practiced their performance the previous day and reported no mechanical problems. Federal Aviation Administration records show clean safety records for both the pilot and performer. Both were from Virginia. The Ohio Attorney General's Office announced this week that following an investigation, they have shut down a Zanesville nursing home in eastern Ohio. The office says complaints about abuse and neglect in nursing homes have risen so far this year. Mike DeWine says his Medicaid Fraud Control Unit has opened 131 cases so far this year, compared with 74 in the same period last year.
Well, part of the job of the Attorney General is to deal with Medicaid fraud. We also have statutory authority in regard to abuse that might occur in a nursing home. And so that's, you know, what we do. We take complaints. We encourage people to call us or to go online at theohioattorneygeneral.gov and make those complaints. And then we take that and go from there and investigate it.
And so it looks like a significant increase over complaints from the year before.
we're getting more increase. We've got an increase in complaints, but frankly, I don't know whether that reflects in any way a change in the circumstances in nursing homes, or rather, is that just due to the fact that people are aware that the Ohio Attorney General's office is investigating nursing home problems. So it could be that. I just don't know.
Okay.
But we are seeing an increase in complaints made to our office.
Can you give us an overall kind of how Ohio sits compared to other states?
I think it's very difficult to compare how we're doing with other states. You know, we have a lot of nursing homes in Ohio. We have an aging population. We have the baby boom generation that is, you know, fast approaching the nursing home time. So this problem will, you know, this challenge, you know, over the next 20 years, 30 years, will continue to, I think, you know, be more and more difficult, more and more problematic.
And tell me a little bit about how you go about investigating once you receive a complaint.
Well, each case is investigated, frankly, differently. What was unique about the Zanesville case and what is different about what we are doing now is that in Zanesville, we put a hidden camera with the permission of the resident and or with the permission of the resident's family. That patient, we put a camera in his or her room. That's a hidden camera. The nursing home does not know it is there. We then leave that in for a while, take it out, and review that tape. And it's a very, you know, slow, laborious process. But as we go through that tape, then we try to determine whether or not that patient is getting the care that the state of Ohio is paying for through Medicaid, and whether or not that patient is being treated humanely.
And so in the case of, say, the Autumn Healthcare in Zanesville, they're shut down, then I guess those families would just be forced to go somewhere else.
Well, the state is involved, the health department is involved in relocating these individuals. It's
okay.
Not a case where people just are thrown out on the street.
Uh-huh.
But what you have to understand, I think we have to understand or to put into context, is that this nursing home had been on the watch list of problematic nursing homes for some period of time. They had failed inspections. Then we were able to provide the State Department of Health with additional specific information as a result of our hidden camera and that investigation. So there's a cumulative number of things, many things, one piled on top of the other, which led finally the Department of Health to conclude that they had no choice but to close this nursing home.
DeWine's office says that in the past year, 32 cases have been reported here in Southwest Ohio. And across Ohio, there have been 63 new cases filed in just the past month. The newborn state budget is just a few days old, but already it has plenty of critics, including some of the lawmakers who voted on it. State House correspondent Karen Kassler reports on a big complaint about the budget that has nothing to do with spending.
The budget debate brought criticism from some lawmakers who didn't want to gripe about spending, but about something else. They included Republican Representative Terry Boos of Norwalk.
We didn't really vet the numbers as hard and as long as we should have. And why? Because we were doing policy.
Democratic Senator Tom Sawyer of Akron agreed, saying he's concerned that the budget is being transformed from a spending plan
into a massive bill grounded in what are primarily policy changes. A close to 5,500-page budget, nearly 5,000 pages of which are policy changes.
And even Republican Senate President Keith Faber said he didn't like some of the policy in the budget.
There are provisions in this budget that if standalone bills came up on them, I would vote against them.
It's not unusual for policy provisions that are not related to spending to be tucked into budgets. But some critics are saying this budget has more than the usual share. There was the exemption of spider monkeys in the exotic animals law and permission for chiropractors to clear student athletes to return to play after concussions. Those were vetoed from the budget by Governor John Kasich. The budget allows for a vote on sin taxes in Cuyahoga County and requires a study on facial recognition software to be used by casinos. It includes parts of a bill known as Nitro's Law to provide serious penalties for animal cruelty in some cases. And of course, there are several provisions related to abortion, including one that requires a doctor to notify a woman in writing of the presence of a fetal heartbeat before an abortion is performed. That last item is reminiscent of the so-called heartbeat bill, which died in the Senate last year. And Nitro's Law was stalled in the legislative process as well. Paul Beck is a professor of political science at Ohio State University, and he suggests there's a strategy at work.
Sometimes these things get slipped in at the last minute, and then the individual member is forced to, you know, the budget's a huge bill. Without looking very carefully at everything, the individual member is forced to kind of gulp and say, well, yeah, okay, I don't like this particularly, but I'm going to go ahead and vote for the omnibus budget bill.
Greg Lawson of the conservative think tank the Buckeye Institute puts it this way.
Budgets become Christmas trees. There's a lot of issues that are out there that people want to see move forward. This provides the opportunity to be able to do it.
But critics do have a way to fight back against the parts that are policy only and not related to spending, says Ohio State law professor Dan Takagi.
If the legislature includes in the bill other provisions that make permanent changes to the law of the state of Ohio, then that ought to be subject to a referendum.
But there's a quick time frame, just 90 days to file the paperwork and gather the signatures to put any disputed issues before voters. Paid workers have been able to make that happen, but many groups that advocate for and against causes don't have the funds to put together a petition drive in a short period of time. But abortion rights supporters say they have lawyers looking into this and other options. Karen Kassler at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. And now a break from all the news. This past week on Kaleidoscope, Juliette Fromholt invited the Skillless Villains into the studios to talk about their music. And WYSO listeners were once again treated to some live music. Here's part of that interview.
Please put down your guard, so I might sing you my song. I used to work out in the yard, and before that my granddaddy's farm. When Wall Street fell, the bank came. And all these stories sound the same. And all these stories sound the same. Been traveling for days, and I lost my mind along the way. So
searching for truth and I found pain. All these stories sound the same. And all these stories sound the same. And all these stories sound.
That was courtesy of Skillless Villains, and we've got them here in the house. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Very happy to have you all here. You know, I have heard your name around the music scene for many, many years, in fact. Dayton Music Fest, at the Trolley Stop, different places around town. Tell me a little bit about how you guys got started making music together.
Well, that's a very interesting question, actually. I just decided to move to Dayton, seven, 8 years ago. TA was just getting out of Full Sail down in Orlando and, you know, just looking to do music. We're both kind of from small northwestern Ohio towns, you know what I mean? So we decided to move to Dayton and kind of came down here and started doing a thing as an acoustic duo and playing for, I don't know, Yellow Springs, Stephen Gregory Band. Like, he gave us kind of our first little shot, you know what I mean, to do the thing. I think maybe even at Peaches. And so, you know, we did that for a couple years, and then we kind of got in with a couple bands in Columbus, Jacob Freely and the Mixtape Bandits, and we played with those guys for a couple of years, and then, you know, you're in the scene for a little while, and bands break up, and you kind of just, you know, move forward. You have a dream and a goal, and, you know, we started recording and, you know, doing that kind of thing, and I think
started stealing band members actually from Jacob Freely.
We started poaching band members. But so Adam Gilbert actually came to play saxophone with us, what I know, 4 or 5 years ago, anyways. And then he was very good friends with Eric because they were both in the program at OSU, and brought Eric on probably what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, two and a half.
Three. About two and a half, three maybe. See, same time kind of flies when you're doing a thing. And then you know, grad school and that kind of thing happened, so we kind of came off the road a little bit and went into the studio, and we're, you know, going that route now, I guess.
When you guys were getting started as an acoustic duo, was the goal always to get a full band and make it more of an electric project and even add the horns? Were you thinking that far ahead, or was it just sort of the luck of the players that you found yourselves aligned with?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, we basically just had a goal to, you know, do music how we kind of wanted to do it and make, you know, that our lifestyle. You know what I mean?
Kind of just fell into it, basically.
Yeah, like, you know, and like,
horn became our sound. We used the horn and tight grooves, and that's basically how we made it.
Yeah, I don't think we planned, like, oh, we're going to be electric or we're going to do this. Like, we just kind of sit around in the space and we're like, hey, what would sound cool? Let's do that.
Does your songwriting process, does most of it come out of kind of jamming and experimentation in the studio, or are you sort of coming together with something written out ahead of time?
Well, I think now we do a little bit more experimenting in the studio, being that, you know, everybody kind of has their own little input that they want to do. And, you know, with Eric and Adam's background, you know, it being in music and that kind of thing, they're very helpful when it comes to arranging songs and that kind of thing, stuff that I wouldn't necessarily know to do. But, you know,
we kind of have the freedom to do that, seeing that we have a home studio we don't have to pay for studio time. And everything else, we kind of can just free flow. We can get 2 or 3 days sitting there and just the money that's spent on the equipment. Basically, we don't have to pay for anything else. So just brainstorming, basically, and coming up with the overall sound.
Yeah, totally.
Does that make putting an album or like your EP, Made in Ohio, having your own studio space, does that make it easier to put together in some respect because you have the time? Or I've also heard some bands say that when they have their own studio space, there's not that pressure to get it done, and you just keep going back and changing and re-recording.
Totally. And like you'll kind of get like caught in a perfection bubble. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, that's not good enough. We got to do it again. And then it's just like you just sit there forever doing it. Finally, you know, you got to. And I feel like sometimes when you're paying for it, you know, when you're in the big studio and doing that kind of thing, you definitely you have to be on point when you come in. You have to have your grooves worked out because, you know, you're paying $150 an hour to be there. So it's just different, but I feel like they both have their pros and cons.
We play so many live shows, it's like we want every show to be kind of different, so we kind of bring something new to the table. Every once in a while we'll be jamming on a song that we've been playing for 5 or 6 years, something new pops out and it's awesome, and we want to get that in the studio, but we have, you know, we play 50 shows a year or something, we can't get all of that in the studio, so
right.
It does kind of put that pressure on us to decide, but hopefully what we end up with is a pretty good final product, because we have so many iterations of it.
When you've got that sort of spontaneous creation happening on stage in the moment, how do you determine sort of what then, or how the song changes from that point? Does it, you know, every time you add something new to a song live, are you thinking, oh, we should do that next time, or are you able to accept that as this happened in the moment and it might not happen the next time we play it?
I don't, sometimes, you know,
depends on how late in the set it is.
sometimes yes and sometimes no. Sometimes we'll do things like, hey, you remember how we did that? And they're like, yeah, we like that, and we'll keep it. And then other times it's just kind of like a bit there and then gone, you know.
If there's something that sticks out profoundly, we usually try to integrate it with the rest. Like as we go in, we just try to take a little bit of everything and try to get that live energy in the studio. That's basically what I've been trying to work on lately. So
is that hard to summon that energy when you're working in the studio and you don't have that audience to feed off of and for get sure. those smiles and responses and people
totally.
Dancing along?
There's you know, when you're sitting, you got 300-400 people in front of you and you're feeding off that energy, you kind of get into it, and it's, you know, you feel it, so you want to give that energy back. A lot of times when you're in the studio, you're just in a booth and it's just you and your boys, so what you try to do is get, it's just a different type of energy that you feed off of, you know what I mean? If you can get that creative energy going between, you know, 4 or 5 people when you're all in a room in the moment, magic happens. Yeah. But it's just, you know, same thing when, you know, you're playing the Newport Music Hall, but it's just a different kind of magic.
Yeah, it's got to be different energy for every song. I feel like we go across a lot of genres. I mean, jazz, pop, funk, rock. If somebody asks us what we play, we can't give them an answer because you listen to our album, you listen to
our
album.
It's
8 different genres, you know. So we got to find where the pocket is. We got to find where the energy is for every single song and kind of reproduce that every time we play live and find a way to get that energy in the studio.
Now, if people want to get their hands on Made in Ohio, where can they go to get that?
Skillisvillains.com.
Excellent, excellent.
You can order right off the website. Yeah. You can message us on Facebook, Twitter. Yep. Instagram, who cares?
We're actually partnering with a local distributor in Columbus called Local Music Shelf. There's a pilot run with 12 shops. You can look them up on, actually, Columbus Songwriters Association. It's right through up. Them as well. So you can look them up on that website. If you're running around Columbus and you see that local music shelf, you know our CD is going to be on it. So feel free to pick it up.
And now, if people want to catch you live, I know you guys have Tap Fest coming up.
Yes.
Tell me about that. That seems like a really cool event.
Tap Fest, actually, and it's unfortunate because this is the last year for it. They've been doing it for 13 years. It's a charity music festival, Mendon, Ohio, Mendon Motor Speedway. All the proceeds, they do like a tab collection, and then everything goes to support the Ronald McDonald House.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's always fun. Freak Bass usually plays with Mike Perkins, with the One-Eyed Show, other bands, us. Lady Bird, she plays up
Freak
there.
Freak Bass will be there, obviously. He's there every year, so.
Since we're talking about Tab Fest and that kind of thing, I did want to thank Kevin Dumont of the Johnny Dredd and the Mystics for coming out and helping us with saxophone. Adam was caught in Flint, Michigan tonight, so he couldn't be here, and Kevin decided so graciously to join us tonight, and that's amazing, and we appreciate that.
You can catch him at Tab Fest, too, actually.
You can catch him at Tab Fest. He has kind of agreed to work it out at Tab Fest, but you could also check him out in Johnny Dredd's and the Mystics. They play around town, and they're phenomenal. I think they were here just a couple weeks ago.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, do you guys view that, you know, having, you know, players in and out. And I know when we were talking, when you guys were getting set up, you know, about wanting to, you know, maybe your ideal would be, you know, have some more horns sit in from time to time. Mm-hmm. Do you guys find that is that like a scary challenge, or is that just like a challenge that you're just like, yeah, okay, we're going to do it, we're going to roll with it, and it doesn't bug you?
We always just roll with
it. Yeah, we pretty much always just roll. Well, I feel like that's all we've ever been able to do is that you get got to. If you want to keep working in this business, you want to branding, and, you know, guys will talk about that a lot too, you know, and to stay in front of people, you have to just keep it going no matter what you got to do. And that's one thing that we learned. I feel like long gone are the days of, like, you know, four guys in a garage hanging out, and I'm sure some bands still do that, and they, you know, play just specifically that those guys. But, you know, you got guys coming with full scale degrees. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They can do stuff, and, you know, so you just rotate guys in and out,
and it keeps us on our toes too.
Yeah, totally.
Because we get a fresh sound in there every once in a while. We have our core four people, you know, and we'll have a trumpet player, a guitar player, trombone player, somebody sit in with us, and every once in a while they'll have really awesome ideas. Like we talked about earlier, when we're playing live, we get really awesome stuff, and that's how we keep it fresh. Right. That's how we keep every show kind of sounded different.
But it did take us a while, and I think once we got that core four guys, that really kind of helped to expand the sound. He said that took a lot, but once you get those interpersonal relationships worked out, then you can really dive into, you know, you put your egos aside, and you're like, okay, can we dissect this? What can we do to make this better? What can we, you know, what is the song trying to tell us? How can we, you know, give it life?
Skillless Villains live on Kaleidoscope this past Wednesday. You're listening to WISO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the second week of middle summer. I walk into the woods and pastures to touch the center of the year, finding August's white snake root with huge buds, wood nettle with its petals, wing stem ready to open, parsnips half to seed but still flowering enough to make part of the field yellow while the other part is white with daisy fleabane. Virginia roses are still bright pink. Prickly buckeye fruits, an inch in diameter, are hanging from the trees. In the backyard, blue jays are restless, protecting their young and stealing the last of the cherries. There is a constant robin peeping throughout the day, the language that guides the fledglings, no longer the raucous mating songs of spring and early summer. Now the violet mallow and great mullein are in full bloom, grapes a half an inch across, rows of Sharon coming out. Blue darners have been at the pond for the past few days, and now a pale, almost transparent damselfly hovers near the lizard's tail. Every once in a while, our green frog croaks, exults with a complex descending call. The first purple coneflower opens in the sun, and the first of the new golden heliopsis. Now the first yarrow has turned almost completely gold, and Osage fruit is almost tennis ball size. Japanese beetles have arrived in the ferns on schedule. Woodpeckers seem to be talking back and forth with their hammering, bursts of 2 to 3 taps at a time. catalpa flowers are falling. I scratch my ankle, the first chigger bite of the year. And before supper, Chris brings over a pint of fresh wild black raspberries. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the third week of middle summer. In the meantime, be outside, touching July.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. WYSO is a community service of Antioch College for the Miami Valley and beyond. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.